On the telephone with us this morning is our good friend and beat writer for the Indianapolis Star, for the Indiana Hoosier football program and basketball program, at Zach Osterman on Twitter. It is Zach Osterman. Zach, good morning. How are you?
One of these days, I'm going to be peppier than you.
Impossible. I am caffeine loaded and ready to go. I am fired up because it's Big Show Friday. We're fired up that you join us as well. And the beginning of basketball season always puts people in this part of the world in a good, good mood, and no rain. That'll be fun for the weekend as well. We're going to talk some basketball here in a minute. But, again, the football program has a bye week. Basketball starts. You got the Haunted Hall of Hoops. You've got Hoosier Hysteria. Let's not forget that football still has some very heavy lifting going on with a third of its season left. There's a big opportunity in front of them tomorrow at the Memorial Stadium, 3:30 against Iowa.
There is, and I mean, it obviously, I mean, just simple math, anybody can tell you, it's getting down to, frankly, they've kind of got to put up or shut up, and I think there are a lot of ways, we've discussed it many times, in which this is a better football team than what Indiana has seen in at least the last 5 years, maybe even longer, but, you know, ultimately, I was talking to somebody else on another radio spot about this last night in Iowa. You know, how much does it really matter in the end game if you're closer and still losing? You're still losing. I think Iowa, obviously, they're undefeated. They're a top 10 team. I do think, and I know that people in Iowa think, that Indiana can give them a really tough game. They've played them very tough the last three times. I think they've beat them two of the last three times Iowa's come to Bloomington. And it's just, it's another one of those games where maybe if you can turn it into a track meet on the scoreboard, you can kind of force Iowa to play a way that it doesn't want to play. Maybe you can control the game. Maybe you can pull an upset. But these are all maybes for a team that has not won a game since late September.
And the Iowa historical references, we all remember, it was Iowa last season after the big Missouri win where Indiana lost two quarterbacks in the span of two quarters and sent the 2014 season into a, I don't want to say a tailspin, I don't think that's fair, but that playbook wasn't, they weren't going to bring that playbook out, but they had to. So it's not a revenge game per se, but it's interesting to see a year later where Indiana is on that day and where Iowa is on that day.
Well, and it's, you know, I mean, people sort of ask, like, what is Iowa, what to expect? I mean, it's not like Kirk Ferentz's offenses are overly basic, but, you know, he doesn't make a lot of mystery about it either. And if they're good at what he likes to do, power run, set up the play action pass, protect the quarterback, take smart shots downfield, on defense, control the line of scrimmage, again, just a good, solid base defense that lets individual talent kind of come to the fore. If they're good enough to do that, they're often very, very good.
And that's what I remember last year. It was run the ball into the line twice and hit somebody for a 55-yard touchdown pass down the sideline. It seemed like it was just nibble, nibble, take a big chunk at it. What's different about Indiana's defense this year against Iowa? Iowa, to me, seems like a straightforward, classic Big Ten opponent. Is Indiana's defense ready to handle that?
Well, you'd hope so, especially after a bye week. That, you know, everybody's relatively healthy. Nobody's fully healthy this time of year, but everybody's relatively healthy, and the stats don't totally bear it out, but anybody who, you know, can give the eye test, I think, would fairly say Indiana is a better team defensively than it was a year ago. I think a lot better at the two things that you really need to be better at against Iowa: stopping the run, clogging up the line of scrimmage, not letting Iowa establish that sort of consistent 5-yard, 6-yard, 8-yard run game, and then getting to the passer a little bit more. If you can do those two things, I do think you can have success against Iowa. But DJ Beathard's a very good quarterback, very poised. Kirk Ferentz is one of those guys who, you look at his running backs over the years, it's much more about the system. It seems like you can go to the number three running back and still get production. So it's, again, it's like one of those things where you look at it and you say, this seems so easy, it seems so basic, and yet Iowa's 8-0, and how many times have we said this about Kirk Ferentz, that he just, the process, when he's got a good team, it just builds to a point where he wins 10, 11 games.
If you are an Indiana fan tomorrow watching the game, do you want Beathard to beat you, make him beat you? is that the quarterback for Iowa. We saw at Michigan State, Indiana did a really nice job against the run for about 3.5 quarters. But Connor Cook is an awfully good pocket passer. Is it going to be the same recipe for that defense tomorrow?
Maybe to some degree. I guess maybe because that would mean that you force Iowa to at least play a faster, more high-scoring game. I mean, you know, unless Iowa comes out and just totally blows Indiana away on the ground in a way that nobody else really has yet this year. And again, I'm not saying Indiana's great against the run because they're not, but they are at least sturdy enough when they need to be more often than not, at least to stay competitive in games. And if that happens, then I would imagine it is at least in part because you forced Iowa to play maybe a more sort of high-tempo, high-scoring game. But, you know, at the same time, with this secondary and the way that it struggled, you know, it doesn't necessarily – if the other quarterback's putting up big numbers, that doesn't necessarily mean it's because you forced him to.
Gotcha. Zach Osterman's our guest this morning. He is the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers. At the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com, at Zach Osterman on Twitter. He also takes care of the basketball Hoosiers as well. We've got football tomorrow, 3:30, number 10, Iowa coming to town. That's the third top 10 opponent IU has faced this year. Hoosiers with four games left. They got to get to that magic number of six to get to a bowl game. Was this bye week, our last football question, was the bye week last week perfectly timed, or would you like to have seen it somewhere else?
I mean, I think for where Indiana is in the season, obviously having gone over October, you like the bye week to come later, I think, rather than earlier. Not very late. A couple years ago, it came like, I think, two games. I think it was actually Wilson's first year it came with just two games left in the season. But you like it to come somewhere kind of in the middle of that Big Ten season-ish, if you can. And I think it was well-timed for Indiana in terms of maybe regrouping a little bit. After obviously a very tough October, and also just, you know, the aches and pains, getting everybody healthy, just sort of getting everybody refocused, knowing that, hey, you know, you can say you've got one whole month ahead of you. Let's take a week off. Let's all sort of zero in the training room, in the film room, on the practice field, everywhere.
And I like the fact, too, it's back-to-back home games out of that bye as well. I know they're big opponents, but you're at home. It's a good three-week stretch in your own bed, and sometimes young teams can use that to their advantage. So hopefully tomorrow that opportunity is taken. As you mentioned earlier in the interview, the style points and betterment is great, but there's only one column in today's day and age that anybody's paying attention to, and that's the W column, and a huge opportunity for the Hoosiers to get that. Now, speaking of wins, Indiana opened the exhibition basketball season back on Tuesday night and had a convincing win over Ottawa. The GGs from north of the border came south of the border this year, and Indiana took care of them. Little bit of a defensive stand to end things up, a little bit old IU, some new IU. Give us your general thoughts, game number one, the exhibition season from Tuesday night of a Hoosier victory.
You know, I mean, I thought Ottawa was a really good opponent for Indiana.
I would have liked to have seen them on some rest. I know they had a tough weekend coming in, but that would have been, if I could complain, that would be my only complaint, because I think the opponent fit the job perfectly.
Yeah, because Ottawa's been, there are no limits on practice in Canada, and they'd already played, as you said, I mean, they were coming in kind of tired, but they'd also already played nine games. So you had one team that was obviously in its first real competitive setting, trying to figure out rotations. Everybody's on minutes limits. You know, guys maybe haven't played together a ton before. Like we heard, you know, Tom Crean say afterward, he said, you know, Max Bielfeldt and Thomas Bryant played well together, but they spend most of their time going against each other in practice. So this is their, you know, they're just now kind of getting a chance to really get a feel for one another in the lineup together. Whereas you've got Ottawa, a team that very much knows what it's about already, a team that's seasoned. I mean, I guess that's sort of a counter to maybe them being tired. And I think Ottawa plays with a 24-second clock, so they understand how to steal possessions with offensive rebounds, with turnovers. I think those are things that Indiana really had to work out in the game, how to keep even a smaller team, but a clever team off the glass. Obviously, how to hold on to the ball. I mean, you talk about, I think it was a 25-3 run in the game. I think 13 first-half turnovers, 6 second-half turnovers. I think that's a big part of chewing that run. There definitely was, undoubtedly, some fatigue from Ottawa, missing some open shots, wearing down maybe as the game went on. But again, I think it's good for, you know, as much as we always talk about in these exhibitions, the big teams, the host teams, the Indiana, the Michigan State, whoever, still sort of working out the kinks. The truth is the teams they're playing usually are too. I think it was useful for Indiana to play a team that wasn't, that already had a very good idea of what it was and what it was about and what its strengths were and how to meet them, how to bring them to the fore. I think Indiana got a much better test from Ottawa than it would have from no disrespect intended, but from UND or even
sure.
Tommy Bellarmine, who's coming in next week.
And I'm of the opinion, bring the whole Canadian tour down here for your exhibition season. Take three or four teams and three or four games. I know that money shouldn't be an issue in any of this, but how much better do you get beating a team 106-42? I don't see that. It's a glorified scrimmage, and you're right. Guys that need to get out there, did you see chemistry? Did you see it? Tom Crean shuffles his lineup more than the blackjack dealer shuffle a deck of cards. Did you see any pairings and combinations that jumped out at you, like when Bielefeld and Bryant were in together, or any backcourt combinations you said, hey, that looks good, let's use that moving forward?
Well, I think there are a couple things. I definitely saw Indiana maybe working out some of the kinks in terms of integrating those big men. And Glass, I know you'll like this reference. I used it last night on another when they were asking me on Iowa about basketball. I said that sometimes I think a good big man, I know every coach says they don't want that ball to stick in the post.
Right.
But a good big man can be a little bit like a good center forward in soccer, that you can just dump it to him for just a second and let everything shift around him. And all of a sudden, obviously, if the opportunity is there to post up and go to the basket, go. But if it goes into him and then everything moves for a second around him, all of a sudden it can come back out. He's held it up long enough to just kind of throw the defense off balance, let everybody find a little bit of space. And then obviously, I mean, we've seen Tom Crean coach teams that had a good big man in good space and shooting. What happens when the ball comes back out? I think they're still figuring some of that out, which is not unsurprising. I think they'll probably still be figuring some of that out, frankly, for the first month and a half of the season. I think Thomas Bryant's a good passer. Max Bielefeld's a good passer. But those things just need to – you're integrating – you're changing the way you play on offense, obviously, from last season, and you're integrating a totally new profile of player. You've had the offseason to do it, but there's a difference, everybody knows, between the offseason and actually getting out there on the court. The other thing that I'd throw out there, and it's not maybe rotation, but I like the idea of Robert Johnson coming off the bench in some
yep.
situations.
Energy
I think
guy.
That gives you – Well, and I think that gives you matchups, because Indiana's got balance, it's got depth, but those things only matter if you can use them to match up. If John Beilein reaches for, you know, X player off the bench with 6 minutes to go, that balance and depth only matters if Tom Crean can look at that substitution and say he's got an immediate counter ready and he sends somebody in after him. I think when you were playing those three-guard lineups, I understand why it made sense to sort of assume, and I did as much as anybody else, that Indiana would just go with the four that returned from last year plus Thomas Bryant to start. And I think you will see that starting lineup at times when it's appropriate. But I like the idea of keeping some of that versatility. Johnson can do a lot of different things. He can play point. He can be a lead defender. He can spot up and shoot. I like keeping some of that versatility on the bench, too. Playing to your strength in terms of your size that you've got now, and also giving yourself options on that bench that you can match up with. Because so much anymore, and I'm not trying to sound like a coach, but basketball is becoming very much a matchup game. Who can you guard? You know, what mismatches can you create? I think that long-term maybe maximizes what should be a strength if Indiana stays healthy.
At Zach Osterman on Twitter, he's the beat reporter for the Hoosiers at theindystar.com. And for the first time, maybe in a year or two or so, and I think even to a degree last year, Indiana is going to put more pressure on their opponents offensively, because the ball doesn't get stuck on offense. There are plenty. There's a multitude of ways Indiana can attack. They are more. The best part is that they move the basketball, but they're moving it to guys who can beat you. The analogy I used earlier in the week, yeah, it's great when you throw it to Hanner at the top of the key, but that doesn't put any pressure on anybody. Well, Bielefeld's shown he can knock down jumpers from there. The first shot of the season is a Thomas Bryant three-pointer in the corner. He's letting people know that he can be out there. Indiana's best defense is their good offense, true or false?
I think it's true, and at the same time, I would warn that I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana – I mean, there's not a lot of room for Indiana to grow statistically from last season. Ultimately, they were ninth in the country at the end of the season in points per possession. I mean, if you are, I do think things are going to, I don't want to say regress, but I mean, I don't know that you're necessarily quite as high. But I mean, what's the difference between being ninth and being 20th?
I was going to ask you the same question.
The idea is, as you said, I think more the versatility that, you know, you've got big men that can knock down jumpers. You've got guards that are more comfortable rebounding. I think we saw some of that, and James Blackman talked about maybe how it was almost easier to get in on the boards than it was last year because you had these big men boxing out for you. But you obviously still had guards who, having last year's experience, were very comfortable crashing the glass. I think that kicks your transition game into gear even faster when it's a guard, whether, you know, Yogi Ferrell or James Blackman Jr. that comes out with that rebound and starts the break. I just think, I think there are, as you said, and sort of as I said, maybe merging the two thoughts of like the last 3 minutes, this is a team that's just got a lot of options at both ends of the floor. I know I talked to Fran Fraschilla about it in the preseason. He thinks it's a team that maybe could be deeper. Maybe this, Tom Izzo might have said this big media day. It's a team that frankly could be deeper than the 12-13 team. Not necessarily as talented in every spot. I'm not comparing, you know, preseason number one to preseason number 15, anything like that. But it's a team that could be deeper. And I think when you say deeper, it's not just how many bodies can you bring off the bench. It's how many options do you have? How many different mismatches can you create? How many, what kind of profile of player can you be putting in there, or profile of lineup can you be putting in there at any given time? I think there are a lot of options for Indiana. I have said that I don't think this is a team that is going to get close to its peak anytime soon, because I think there's a lot of sort of ironing out that needs to happen with all those options. But I think Indiana, if things break the right way, can wind up being a very, very good team.
All right, the final question for you this morning. Indiana will win the Big Ten championship regular season title if?
If their schedule works out for them. They play Maryland and Michigan State at home. They play Michigan State away. They play Purdue at home. So three of your four, right now, at least on paper, arguably toughest games, are in Assembly Hall. You want that. Their road schedule is rather kind. They play Minnesota on the road. They play Penn State on the road. They play Rutgers on the road. You don't know what Illinois is going to look like. There is another road opponent. They don't have to go to Ohio State this year. As I said, they don't have to go to Maryland or Purdue.
They never go to Ohio State, it seems like.
Nobody ever has an easy Big Ten schedule.
No, but this one sounds pretty good. But if you could draw it up, this wouldn't be too far from the ideal, correct?
Right. I mean, you've got, again, Nebraska, Minnesota, Penn State, Rutgers on the road. There's probably your bottom four in the conference, at least on paper right now.
Does Illinois have any healthy players?
It's funny. I heard John Gross say at Big Ten Media Day, he was talking about injuries.
I'm surprised he brought guys to Media Day. They probably get hurt there.
Well, he said he had a trainer come up to him and tell him that somebody was out for 4 weeks. And he said, "You're telling me he's only out for 4 weeks? That's great news.
That's good news.
I wish I got more injury diagnoses like that." But the point is, I think it's if, obviously they've got a round into form and all those sorts of things, but I think it's if that schedule works for them. If they can get as much as they need, it's almost a season where maybe Indiana's better served, and I don't want to, you're never better served losing, but getting roughed up a little bit at certain points of the non-conference schedule, learning some things about itself that, frankly, you can only ever learn in losing. Maybe coming out of non-conference with only like 10 wins or 9 wins instead of everybody wants 11, 12, 13, but being a little bit more battle-tested, a little bit more confident that it has sort of seen its own weaknesses and been able to address them, then get into Big Ten play, and all of a sudden maybe that unbalanced schedule plays to your favor. Would you rather be 10-3 on December 30th playing at Rutgers, but then win 14 in the Big Ten, or 13-0, but then only win 11. I think I know.
Absolutely. It's interesting because sometimes when the team fires and when the team develops, people use the word peak. I'm not sure when a team actually peaks or they fill out the form. Yeah, somebody, if Indiana starts 13-0, I don't think anybody's going to be upset about it, but I understand your point. Is it happening because it's all firing on the same cylinders? And the one thing that Indiana teams that we can point to, they haven't finished seasons well. We've got a new strength and conditioning coach. We've got new ideas on that side. This is the third one in the last 8 years, Jeff Watkinson, and then you had Janae from who left for Kansas, and then, and now it's Lionel Lionel Anderson. So you've got that issue because the Hoosiers haven't hit the finish line or hit the end of the conference season in full stride the last couple of years.
No, I think that's definitely true, and I think it's one of those two where, again, if and maybe I think Tom Crean is already thinking somewhat about that when he's not starting those three-guard lineups. Don't burn anybody out. Use your versatility to play the matchups. Don't just sort of say, this is the most talented five I can put on the floor right now to start every game and let everybody else worry about matching up with me. You want to see that depth maybe used more. Maybe you do reach a little bit further down the bench, especially in the non-conference season, especially against, frankly, the Minnows on your schedule. That, you know, go to Juwan Morgan, go to OG Anunoby, go to Ryan Burton. Give them some minutes. Don't, you know, maybe give them too much responsibility if they're not ready for it, but keep legs fresh and use, again, that balance, that depth, that versatility to maybe not have to over-rely. Because the other reality is, I mean, James Blackman played 30 minutes a game last year. Yogi Ferrell played almost 35. How many more minutes can you really put on those guys? And we obviously saw Blackman tail off last season. There's no question.
Robert Johnson picked up an injury, and he limped it home too. That was it didn't.
Some of that is obviously the freshman, you know, that happens to freshmen all over the country. But that can be a product of this season. Indiana again, maybe reaching for that balance a little bit more. That might keep everybody fresher, everybody healthier, and obviously, like, you know, there are very few teams in the country that can absorb a major injury, and you're always one injury away from all this.
No, you're absolutely right.
Totally gone up in smoke. But as much as we can talk about now health and all that, I think Indiana is well-positioned, well-placed to maybe, you know, ease its way through certain parts of its season and try to keep minds and legs both fresh. And maybe, hopefully, as you said, you get to mid-late February and you're ready to sort of kick it into fifth gear a little bit more.
All right, great job as always. Hoosier football tomorrow, 3:30. Hoosier basketball back in action Monday night, 7 p.m. against Division II powerhouse Bellarmine. And then it's the opening night for basketball coming up on Friday the 13th. As Eastern Illinois comes to the Assembly Hall. We appreciate your time as always. At Zach Osterman on Twitter, theindystar.com. He's the beat writer for the Indiana Hoosiers football and basketball. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Matt.